Hey, you're listening to the Creative Pep Talk Podcast. We help you build a thriving creative practice. My name's Andy J. Pizza! You can stay up to date with all things Creative Pep Talk by following me on Instagram at Andy J. Pizza. Let's get into today's episode. Huge shout out to our sponsors, FreshBooks. FreshBooks is an accounting software specifically designed for small businesses. They make invoicing, expenses, payments, accounting, estimates, cheese grading. Okay, they don't do that, but they do make proposals extremely easy. Do yourself a favor, streamline the admin side of your business today and go to freshbooks.com/creativepep to get a 30-day free trial. And don't forget to enter Creative Pep Talk in the How did you hear about us section? Thanks, FreshBooks. Today, we have a super, super special episode that I have been dying to share with you. The episode contains chats with several creatives that have these fantastic tactics and ideas that have personally inspired me. I've personally referenced them tons of times since I've had these conversations, and this episode is going to end with an excerpt from a chat that I had that brought me to real salty tears in my eyes, and I'm getting teary just thinking about this inspirational tidbit that I got from one of these chats. All of these chats were recorded while traveling to one location. Where did I find all of this creative inspiration, you might ask? Was it the bustling innovations of Silicon Valley? Was it from the trend-setting minds of Williamsburg, Brooklyn artists? Maybe these exciting ideas came from some mythical and mysterious creative hotspot like Marfa, Texas. No. The recent trip that's had me buzzing with creative fuel was from a journey to a little place called Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I got an email from South Dakota. A state emailed me and asked us personally to come visit the creative things that were happening in Sioux Falls. And if I got this email from South Dakota asking to sponsor a trip and a podcast episode about their creative turf just like 1 year ago, I might have not done it. But this request came shortly after a deep conviction that I had bubbling from within me and I shared this conviction on the podcast just 6 months ago or something about wanting to highlight not just the creative celebrities that are the exceptions to the rules, but to celebrate creative practitioners that are day in, day out, showing up with creative practices and disciplines and tactics in their creative tool belts and doing the work. You do not have to be world famous to have a thriving creative practice. And I want to show that on this show, and I want to highlight it from time to time. In fact, a thriving creative practice has nothing to do with fame. In my definition, a thriving creative practice means doing work, creative work that's lighting you up creatively and is allowing you financially to thrive in your lifestyle. How do I know this is possible without being famous? Because I saw these people living and thriving and bursting with creative wisdom in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I had tons of fun while I was there. In the town, visiting the sculpture trail, eating delicious food and drinking delicious coffee and beer at all the independent restaurants and cafes. It was mwah, fingers kiss chef thing. But what hit me the hardest were the people. Not only was every person I met in these creative locations super enthusiastic about their creative stuff and they were super welcoming, but they were super legit. I'm talking Instagram verified kind of legit. I'm talking runs world-class publications that I'm already obsessed with before I even knew about these owners in South Dakota. Legit. I'm talking about full-on huge creative nuggets of wisdom, just as legit and interesting and inspiring as some of the most famous people that I've interviewed on this show. That's the kind of legit these people are. This episode is a celebration of the 99% of thriving creatives that don't live in the biggest markets and have fancy chairs and awards, but they just show up day in, day out, doing their creative practice and knocking it out of the park. This episode is for you. In this episode, I'm going to share pieces of four conversations I had while I was in South Dakota. Each one of them contains one or two or three super tactical, strategic, creative tips that you can use today. There really is creative magic hiding in the everyday. I was, Sioux Falls, it's famous. There's just gorgeous waterfall that I went and saw, and it was covered in snow and ice, and it was just so freaking pretty. And I was reminded of this meme that I saw recently online where it was like this sad-faced cat or something, and it said, the feeling of when you check behind waterfalls in a video game and there's no secret treasure. and I just felt like, man, there was so much treasure hiding behind these falls. I was not the sad cat meme. I was the happy, excited video game explorer who found thriving creative magic behind the falls of Sioux Falls. And so I want to go through each of these conversations, give you some of this magic, show you that wherever you are, whatever you're facing, that these obstacles, these perceived constraints can be the magic hiding in your everyday. Let's get to the first one. Just a heads up, if you're listening with small ears, whether you have small ears or, you know, children with ears that are small, there is some adult language in this episode. So just be warned. Okay, so our first clip is with illustrator and designer Les Cotton. Les works at a marketplace. He's a creative director at this place called Looks, L-O-O-K-S, Marketplace. And that's where we were set to meet up and have our chat. When I got to Looks, I was genuinely blown away. The marketplace is this huge modern boutique butcher and grocery store and coffee shop and incredible restaurant. I had a unforgettable cheeseburger while I was at Looks. I'm still dreaming about it now. The brand was so stunning and modern and fun that I was like, how can this be here? Where did this come from? They have this huge slick sausage character, like modern character logo that's been made into this massive lit up sign in the front of the shop. And it was so stunning. I was like, I gotta learn what the heck, how did this pop up in this spot? And I looked them up on Instagram, and their handle is @looksmarketsf. And I instantly thought, oh, okay, that makes sense. SF, like San Francisco. It's like a part of a chain that was birthed from San Francisco. That totally makes all of this make so much more sense. And then I thought, boom, no, you idiot. It's not SF like San Francisco. It's SF as in Sioux Falls. I feel like this story uncovers my own deep-seated creative bias that great things can only come from huge coastal creative hotspots. You know, I don't live in a huge coastal creative hotspot. And so this bias is even hurting my ability to make excellent things. If I'm in the back of my mind, if I'm believing like, well, I'll make something cool, but it'll never be as cool or as important or as legit as stuff coming out of LA or New York or Portland or whatever. And so I was humbled to find out that this incredible spot was homegrown in Sioux Falls, and it helped me dismantle some of my own creative mythology. I want to cut to my conversation, a clip from my chat with Les Cotton, the creative director at Looks Marketplace. And I was so excited about the tactics that he shared. I feel like there's some good mindset stuff here and some practical stuff that can might even help some of you make some quick cash, which I think everybody is into. I was super pumped about this. And he framed them. He branded these ideas for himself in such a way that I just thought, man, these are so portable and exciting as tips. Super pumped to share them with you. Here's my little chat with illustrator, skateboarder, designer, and creative director, Les Cotton. Man, I wish my name was Les Cotton. That's such a good name. All right, here he is. Almost always my client stuff, where the pressure's on, the stuff that I'm doing there came from my sketchbook when I wasn't on the clock. You know what I mean? So there's something where you can borrow from yourself of it, all the time that you make where you're like, this should be a complete waste of time. Yeah. If you can get into that zone, then later you can borrow from yourself, steal, you know, and add it to the situations where all of a sudden now it's on the clock and it's important and the deadline's there, whatever.
I definitely have like a graveyard folder on my computer where it's just like random like ideas and thoughts that maybe, like, you know, I have this big Illustrator document. There's this one thing that, like, that could be something someday. Like, everything else is shit.
Yeah.
That thing, so I'm saving it.
You know? Dude, I love the graveyard folder. That's amazing. I think even sometimes I'll go back through sketchbooks and remember things and see things that I've completely forgot about. And yeah, I love that practice.
Awesome. I was updating my website last night and putting like some of my old Instagrams on there and just like going through it like for like a couple of years. I'm like, yeah, dude, I made this and this. And it's just like, now it's just like a stack. And that's the thing too. It's just like the iPad's been kind of nice and not, you know, it's like,
pros and cons.
I don't have that stack of paper anymore, you know? So like, I've recently started to go back and like, now I have scrap papers like everywhere and just like little
things
in there just to do it. Even though I'm trying to like not collect so much shit. It's like, just, I have a closet, just stacks of it. I actually like, last year, my basement got flooded and I had to completely take out all the carpet in the basement, and we redid it in tile. So if it happens again, because wet carpet is the fucking worst.
Yeah.
And to help pay for the tile, I had like some got ruined, but I had a huge stack, and I'm just like, well, I'm just gonna go on Instagram and sell these for like $20-$30, and I made enough money to pay for the tile.
That's awesome.
And I was like, it's just like little shitty doodles, you know, like, not framed, not anything. It's like, like, some of the stuff here is, like, crap, but if you cut it out, that part's rad.
That's like, sweet.
I kind of had a good response to that. I kind of want to repost and do a little bit more because I found some more, you know. Like, it's so crazy. Like, some people, like, they get scared with those, like, the high price points of, like, art, framed art, you know. I can spend $300 on this. I mean, it's dope.
Yeah.
I don't have $300, but people spend, like, $50 on, like, just a few little drawings, you know, like the amount. I was super surprised, like, with the response to that. So
that's awesome. That's a good tip. I actually
flood lemonade. I think.
What? Yeah,
I made lemonade out of that shit. You know?
That's amazing. That's dude. Flood lemonade. That's amazing. Man, that's good. That's good thinking. I actually, my manager's always giving me crap. He shares a studio with me, and he is always watching me throw away all of my sketches. I've been way more ruthless about it for some reason. And he's like, dude, somebody will want that. Like, and I, you know, I think about how I have random sketches and doodles from some of my heroes. And I'm like, I frame them and I'm like, dude, yeah. So I think, you know, you never, like, there's so many things that I think you don't even have to be some huge established artist. Like, if you're doing stuff that's cool, people would like to, you know, decorate their house with that thing.
Totally. I've totally seen that. It's like, yeah, I have this, like, this, you know, 4x4 little doodle that you drew just, like, at work one day in my
house.
It looks sweet as fuck in a frame, too.
Man.
Like, yeah.
That's a good idea. And you've got a lot of good gold here, man. You've got the garbage file. You've got the flood lemonade. This is straight up gold.
Look, the other thing I did with my, my drawings, I said to... I'm setting I'm 35, so in 5 years, if I don't sell all of it, I'm going, what's his name, John, he just died, that contemporary artist. I will not make any more boring art. Who's that? Starts with a B. Anyway, he burned, when he was turned 40, he burned all of his artwork.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm totally doing that.
That's a, like,
actually, that's
I can't remember it. I can't remember what the name is. Oh, really?
Yeah, I posted him. It's like, if you don't take him, I'm burning this tomorrow. And I like, it's like this sweet doodle. I'm like, no one wanted it.
That's amazing. Did you film it?
Yeah.
Dude, it that's awesome.
People are like, what the fuck? He's like, I offered, you could have bought it.
All right, we got the graveyard folder and the flood lemonade. Come on, that is golden. I love the graveyard folder. I've been thinking more about this recently. We talked about it on the podcast, this idea of rebooting old pieces of work. And a lot of that stuff can come from, you know, sometimes most of the stuff I do for client stuff, the best stuff, is stuff that I was doing in my free time, in my self-initiated work, and I reboot random little happy accidents from the sketchbook or weird things that happened in a personal project, and I kind of license those from myself for creative projects. I love this idea of the graveyard folder, you know, throwing stuff in there, cataloging things that happened that you don't really have any purpose for. You don't know what it might be good for. I do this all the time when I have stories for the podcast. I have a little note on my phone that's just like, I don't know what this story means. I don't know how it could relate, but I'm going to just catalog all these things so that when an episode comes up and I need some extra juice, I can sift back through there and find some stuff in my graveyard folder. Love that one from Les. And then I freaking love the idea of selling these odds and ends from your creative practice. They might not mean anything to you, but going around to my buddy Andrew Nyer, his new house, he's got lots of framed sketches and original pieces from some of our favorite artists. There's just something so incredible about their hand was on this stuff. And I'm sure to those artists, they're like, yeah, you know, might as well put that in recycling bin. But you'd be blown away by how much people want your originals. And so I'm going to start exploring some of that too. Love the flood lemonade idea of like this thing that was a total disaster. He just put a spin on it, turned those lemons into lemonade. And I love this idea of like, if someone doesn't buy this in the next hour, I'm going to set it on fire. It's just freaking brilliant. Love that, Les. Had a blast talking to you. Let's go to my conversation from Mitch Torbert. He is a designer. He works at the Fernson Brewing Company. And actually, when I first got to Sioux Falls and they were giving me a little tour, I saw the brewery, and I was like, man, that is a dope brand. Like, they had all this beautiful signage in white on the windows. And I just thought, dude, that freaking looks fantastic. And because I was, you know, flying by the seat of my pants and just kind of taking it as they were delivering it, like just let them lead the way with these people. I didn't even know I was about to go talk to the designer behind the brewing company. And so I was pleasantly surprised, got to sit down over a beer from Fernson. It was very delicious, a little hazy IPA, so tasty. Sat down, chatted with my man, Mitch, and he was delivering some hot fire about defining the problems, defining good and manual labor as a way to unlock ideas. Here it is, Mitch Torbert. This is a two-part question. So okay. First one is, what does a bad day look like as a creative for you? And then what's in your utility belt to shake that up? And it might relate to, and then where I'm going to go next is about being in smaller markets. I'm in a smaller market. Lots of my listeners are, you know, I think yeah. I have tons of friends in New York and I love the scene there, but I do think, that there's a lot of people that get tired of feeling like everything's about New York or everything's about the coasts. So it doesn't have to be, your bad days don't have to be related to that, but sure. That's where we're going to talk about next. So that's the big umbrella. Bad days.
Sure. Yeah.
I have like two bad days out of seven every week. That's really? About okay. Yeah.
That's,
so I, you
so
know,
that's the bad day that you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. That's, just like you're like, ah, the weather sucks today. There's no sun. You know, whatever it is. You're. What am I even doing with my life? Like, what are the ways you come to the office and you're like, okay, these are my go-to things to get my inspiration kicking or whatever.
Sure. I would say that, like, the biggest thing I can do... Well, okay, let me back up and answer the bad day thing.
Yeah.
There's oftentimes, very often, that we've got a general direction for a beer, for example, or a campaign, but we don't necessarily know what the spirit of it is, and we're kind of between things and oftentimes I will start working in software or in a sketchbook a little bit too early.
Yeah.
And that seems like it often kickstarts.
Uh-huh.
What a bad day is, uh-huh. is that I haven't done my legwork.
What is the legwork?
So the legwork, then one of the solutions is I've got
sorry, great, I skipped ahead.
No,
yeah,
I've got a great I've got a great partner in the marketing department. It's basically just Evan Richards and I that are
this guy?
Yeah, this guy sitting
over
behind
here.
Us who's probably listening in. But
shout out to Evan.
But we've worked together for a long time and we've gotten a very good dynamic and we sit right next to each other. And so oftentimes what can kick ourselves out of that thing is just a hot minute to like lean back and like let's pull ourselves back to the general idea of what we're doing here, what our goals are, what problems we're trying to solve. That very much helps. I think a fellow creative who you share a brainwave with, oftentimes it's not him, and it's someone in a totally different field, and I'll be wrestling with something big, and frankly, oftentimes I hear like, "Dude, it's just beer. Like, have fun, you know."
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And that's a little bit of permission to like to let it go and don't put so much weight on something. But the other solution that I often resort to is that it's still a very small company and we run a canning line in the back that's usually running. So about a half hour working on the canning line and I'll come up
that's
with something.
Cool.
It's
good,
shower
man.
Mentality, you know, or whatever. Like, get away from it, go do something else and talk to someone who doesn't know anything or doesn't, you know, intend to know much about the design process and they'll sometimes have something for you.
That's really cool. Yeah. I like, I want to go back to the first thing where you said, I always find that if I jump into the sketchbook without defining the problem, that's where it always goes wrong. And that's one of the reasons I asked about what's good design is defining the problem for me is almost always what is good in this scenario. Like, I think about that question all the time. For instance, when you say, what's a good podcast? Well, you might think, well, it's kind of like a good TED Talk or it's kind of like an audiobook. The truth is, neither of those are true. People listen to podcasts while they're doing the dishes, or they do it while they're mowing the grass. They're distracted.
Yeah.
So what makes a good audiobook or what makes a good TED Talk doesn't necessarily translate.
Sure, yeah.
So you gotta. So I love this idea. So a lot of times, if I get into an editorial illustration or whatever, and I'm just drawing or working with something, and I never stop to say like, what am I trying to achieve with this? Mm-hmm.
What does success look like in this situation?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so I love that you said that. I also think about it like I keep working with these two polarizing sides of creativity, which are, I call it exploratory or strategic. So I think a lot of people think of creativity as exploratory, which is, to me, starting without knowing where it's going to go. Like, that's a lot of people's definition of creativity is, we're going to start working on a song, and the whole point is that we have no idea what it's going to be until we've done it, right?
Right.
Whereas strategic is the opposite, where you're saying, this is the end we have in mind, some goal, and we're going to reverse engineer how we get that.
Yeah.
And so I think for me, design hits a lot of the strategy side,
uh-huh.
you know, like setting that benchmark before you get started.
Right.
So yeah, I really like that.
Which is an interesting contrast. So my background is not in design at all. I kind of fell backwards into it. I studied printmaking. I studied art in school, and it took a long time for me to break out of I had this kind of strata that like making something good was about peering down dark hallways where you don't know where they are, where they go. And that's, you know, exploratory to your point. But design is very much more about, you know, putting a dot on the wall and throwing a dart at it. You can't hit that dot if it's not there.
You were saying that sometimes when you get stuck, you'll go out to the canning. Are you actually like working?
Yeah, there's a pack off table. None of the important stuff. That's all done.
Right.
By the time
the chemists.
Someone's working there, and they have headphones on, and they're just taking canning cans and putting them on pallets, basically. And those folks are happy for a break.
To
go eat their lunch and whatever. And so you can always step in and help them. And that's just my case, but I think there's always a sidewalk that can be shoveled, or there's always a, you know, bar towels that can be folded, or whatever it is, and it doesn't take long to find something you can do for a half an hour, and if it doesn't enlighten you, at least it'll de-escalate your anxiety about what you're in, and so the next time you sit back down, you have a little bit more objectivity towards what you're doing.
Man.
You might look at your screen and say, that was dumb what I did for 2 hours there. Yeah. You know, like, this is the wrong direction. And glad you caught it now.
I love that. It reminds me of my buddy who used to work, like, doing more manual labor kind of stuff. He's a designer now, but how he would have so many good ideas doing manual labor. And then when he quit doing that, and he was doing design full time, he just found like his ideas dried up. So, you know what I mean? There's something about, there's a monastic kind of, you know, meditation to doing stuff like that.
Hey, quick shout out to our sponsor, FreshBooks. FreshBooks is an excellent company that will help you thrive as a small business. I don't know about you, but I freaking hate bookkeeping, invoicing, all of the admin crap that comes with small business. I feel like, you know, I got into this work so that I could do creative stuff, not penny pinch and you know, push numbers around on a page. And before I got accounting software and I was doing it on a spreadsheet, I was so miserable, and having to start every time fresh with my invoices, it was just a freaking disaster. FreshBooks makes it so that you don't have to do that. They're a simple app that allows you to streamline all of the admin side of your business. They really are an excellent company, and everything, every way that I've interacted with them has just been a pleasure. Love these people. Super proud to have them as sponsors on our show. Go check them out at freshbooks.com/creativepep. And don't forget to say that you heard about FreshBooks from listening to this podcast, Creative Pep Talk. Thanks, FreshBooks. Tons of gold. I love talking about defining the problem, defining good. I love what he talked about, you know, canning, manual labor to kind of get the wheels turning. There's a meditation to like just getting something done. I feel like it's a cool bundling thing that happens. You know, bundling we've talked about on this show, where, you know, putting together things you don't want to do with the things that you do want to do as a way of getting through the parts of your creative business that you really dread. How can you kind of put those things together so that they're bearable? And I feel like there's a thing here where if you're in a creative problem, you can go do the non-creative work that it takes to keep the creative practice thriving, and see that non-creative work as a meditation, as manual labor that can help get the gears turning in your brain in different parts, and let your subconscious, you know, mull on those creative problems. I like that because I need those kind of incentives to do the boring stuff. I also love this thing we talked about, strategic creativity versus exploratory. That's been a big theme on the podcast lately. And I've been thinking about how exploratory creativity, pure exploratory, is kind of like the show Lost, where every episode. They were making it up as they went along, and it was exciting during the process, but the end result, you know, not everybody was crazy about that, because it ended in a place where, you know, it didn't seem as planned. Whereas a movie like Knives Out, which is a murder mystery, there's a very clear end in sight, and it was kind of written backwards to get to that point. And then I was thinking recently about Curb Your Enthusiasm, that Larry David comedy show. They have a really good synthesis of both of them. And so they do exploratory creativity, because every scene is improv'd. There's no specific script. And yet every scene has to get a very particular plot point across. And so that's the strategic side. And they kind of married them together of like, we know where the episode has to go. We know where every scene has to land for it to end up there. But we're going to explore all along the way until we get there and let it happen organically. And yeah, I love that we got to tease out some of these ideas, because I think there's some magic if we can figure out how to loosely hold intention, exploratory creativity with strategic. Yeah, fantastic. Love chatting with you, Mitch. You are awesome. Next, let's go to Wes Eisenhower. Here we have a very, very busy creative person. Wes is the director of Kick Turn Creative Studio. He's a photographer. He's a musician in the band Soul Crate, which is Spotify verified, and they have millions of listens. He's also verified on Instagram as a photographer and designer. This guy is world class in pretty much every single way. And I went and met so many people in Sioux Falls, and almost all of them said, Wes encourages and inspires my creative practice, which is just so moving to me. In this clip, Wes and I talk about how he transitioned his focus from his music career to his photography and design. And I want you to take away this idea: with creativity, nothing gets wasted. Wes used his music career to deeply inspire and plant seeds in his design and photography career. I see too many creative people pivot so hard in their practice that they don't use the skills, networks, connections, and lessons from their previous paths in their new paths. Even when it's not a creative path, there are things that you can take over. There are connections and networks and skill sets that can help you stand out in your market and help you start in this new path instead of starting from scratch. When I first started public speaking, my first thought was, what does a pro public speaker do? Where do they get started? But instead, I thought, what if I infiltrate the market and industry that I'm already part of in the illustration and design speaking circuit and use that as a launch pad for other stages outside of my world? Okay, enough with the preamble. Here is a chat with Wes Eisenhower, and let's learn from his big creative pivot.
Your way into photography?
Yeah. So, yeah, played music in the same group for almost 18 years. Did some, you know, national tours in the U.S. Played music, came into, you know, the band bought a camera. We bought a Canon 5D Mark II just because we needed photography in content. And this was, you know, probably 7-8 years ago. And when I got that camera in my hand, I was just like, my goodness, this is
Mark
a powerful
got
tool.
A lot of capital,
oh my goodness.
Power, yeah.
And I bought it to do with the intention of doing video stuff first, and then kind of took a step back and was like, all right, I need to learn how to take a photo before I can do anything else. And didn't talk much about it, just started going to work on it and decided I wanted to be good at it. And that gave me the same kind of feeling as music. That rush of being creative and putting things out there and getting a response and feedback and doing it again and trying to get better. And it also paid the bills a lot better and allowed me to not have to be away from my family, you know, 90 to 120 days a year. So still obviously do a lot of music, have incorporated that in the video and creative work. We do a lot of our own scores for video stuff and little, you know, little music things. So photography kind of fed that same energy as the music did, but it ended up being something that I could really see a clear career path with.
I even noticed the music in the videos, but I wasn't aware that it was in-house stuff.
Sure.
It sounds great. Thanks. It's really, ad sound is really cool. Do you feel like the music experience changed how you approach photography? Like when you're doing, because you do a lot of weddings, do you feel like the gig culture and the, you know, all of the stuff you were doing with shows somehow impacted you to be a different kind of photographer?
I often attribute one thing I say to a lot of my clients in the photography world is like, I'm never gonna get ruffled. You're never gonna see me stressed out. Like if I'm in a situation that needs to be, I'm going to try to be as level as I can at all times. And I think a lot of people, most people can learn how to use a camera, but it's also how you're going to use that camera. How are you going to make your subjects feel at ease? How are you going to walk into a room of people you don't know and pull that camera out? And that has informed the way I approach photography, certainly. And I think another thing, I feel like I have a reasonably high threshold for stressful situations. Yeah. And I attribute that a lot to being on stage. Yeah. And being in front of a crowd of 500 people. And then suddenly it's like, okay, it's time to freestyle. And it's like, what are you going to come up with in front of all these people? And you're obviously going to eat shit.
You're put on the spot.
And you're going to do it a lot. Yeah. And suddenly after you do that a few times, like, those other moments, they become easier to handle in my mind. So I attribute a lot of my threshold for stressful moments to being on stage in front of a thousand strangers.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
Okay, so that's Wes Eisenhower. Did you ever have the most delicious meal, but you just couldn't finish it? And you got a doggy bag, you got the takeout box, but then you left the takeout box at the table at the restaurant, and you just sit up every night dreaming about that slice of pizza that you could have had, the one that got away. Is it just me? Well, that might just be you if you leave this creative takeaway out of your brain as you leave this episode. Do not forget it. If you use your creativity, nothing gets wasted. To me, creativity has this redemptive grace that means even the most seemingly wasteful side roads and roadblocks and dead ends can be redeemed if you will use your creativity and use all that crap that didn't go right as fertilizer for your next big pivot. So good. Okay. Last but anything but least, I have to introduce you to my new friend, Hugh Weber. Hugh is the managing director of The Great Discontent and the Design Observer, and he actually is the owner of The Great Discontent now. And when I found out that the owner of The Great Discontent was in Sioux Falls, I was beyond thrilled. You may not know this, but The Great Discontent is an interview publication that focuses on interviewing, you know, creative excellence, people with creative excellence. And many of the people that I've interviewed on this show, I found in their magazine. Many of the creative lessons that I've learned from studying thriving creative people came from the stories that I read in The Great Discontent. There's so much creative gold that has been put out through this online and in-print magazine. I actually didn't even have it in my schedule to meet up with Hugh. It came up last minute on my last day before I flew out, but I'm so glad that I made it a priority to hang out with this guy because it freaking changed me, this conversation. Hugh is my people. We had a super huge, long, sprawling, intense chat. We were both passionately like excited. We talked about how the closest people in your life can change you and how they inspire and influence everything that you do. And one day I want to have Hugh on this show in his own episode so we can talk about all of that stuff. But I want to share with you, I want to leave and end this episode the way that Hugh ended our conversation because it literally brought a tear to my eye. It deeply inspired me and moved me. This guy is just a living embodiment of the graciousness and creativity that I want to ooze out from this podcast. Hugh gifted me this little button that he had on his shirt that said, "I have seen the future." And he told me a story about this button that made me cry. I left this conversation moved and inspired and refueled because of this story. And I don't want to spoil it anymore. So here he is, the wonderful Hugh Weber.
My inspiring kind of spark for a lot of this. I wear this pin. So you have to imagine in your mind's eye, I wear this pin that is a simple blue border that just says, "I have seen the future." Are you familiar with this at all?
No, I think I've seen them before, but I don't know what it is.
So in 1939, we're just in the midst of the Great Depression. New York, actually, a couple years early, but in 1939, 1940, New York decides to hold a World's Fair. And so these World's Fair would draw from countries all over the world. They were these incredible kind of spaces of design and culture and interaction. It's actually on the grounds of like where the U.S. Open is, and that was where they held it. It was the first major collection of global designers, right? So like graphic design only became a thing. Design only became a thing in the early 1900s.
Yeah.
This was like 12 years later, and this was the first collection of them. So they all got together. Like they, Ladislav Sutner, who's a great designer from Czechoslovakia, came over. Through all over the world, they came together. Sutner's an interesting story because while he was here working on the exhibit for Czechoslovakia, Hitler took his country, and so he never got to return home. So it's this moment between the Great Depression, which is like tragic domestically, and World War II and the Holocaust, and that is tragic, on a humanity scale. Yeah. But there was a designer named Norman Bel Geddes, and Norman had primarily been a stage designer on Broadway. And General Motors, again, we tend to think of like corporate engagement means that things are sold out and shitty, right? Like, sorry, now we need an e-beep. But this was a moment where like corporations were trusting designers to say like, "Tell us what the future looks like." So they did this exhibit called Futurama, which, of course, like you Google it and you get a bunch of images of the robot, but like Futurama. And it was this like incredible experience that people, it reminds me a lot of like the older school Disney rides where you'd sit on this thing, you kind of hover at these huge heights over these modern, futuristic cities. They were imagining what 1960 would look like, right? So transportation, food, work, all these things. At the very end, you if you were one of the 5 million people that went through it over the course of 2 summers, you were given this pin that simply said, "I have seen the future." And on the back, you make sure that it's a real one from 1939, 1940, right? So I started as an exercise in my own kind of needing to make sure I stayed optimistic, because like, how optimistic would you have to be on the cusp of World War II and having just gone through the Great Depression to be like, "Let's imagine 20 years from now"? No, you would be like, "The world is coming to an end. I'm not going to imagine next week." We think that right now is this like tragic, crazy moment in time, and it is. Sure. It is. It's a challenging moment, but like, we still need to imagine what 2040 is going to be like, or we won't. So what I started as a matter of practice, Andy, and this is how I'll wrap up with you, but what I started as a matter of practice is I wanted a way to commit in that same kind of ROI kind of thinking to people that when I met them, maybe for the first time, maybe I'd met them a couple times, to say like, "You're someone that 20 years from now, I'd like to be collaborating. Like when I look at my future 20 years from now, you're a part of it." And so people like Brad Montague and people like, a lot of my friends through AIGA, and just met this extraordinary designer, Lawrence Azarod, who won a Grammy for doing the Voyager gold medal album, like just crazy stuff. So today is your day, Andy J. Pizza. Today you join what's called, don't tell anyone, but it's called the 1939 Society.
Yeah.
And you are one
what?
Of less than 50 that join the official "I've Seen the Future" club. So welcome.
Yes.
Your membership packet will be in the mail. the obligations are this, right? Oh, the obligations are optimism. Yeah. The obligations are connection. The obligations are doing something generative with your career. And you're doing all those things, but you've got to do it for the next 20 years, okay. Right? Like, you've got to keep building because you're doing great work.
Man, so. I so appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Man, that is so good. Thank you so much, Hugh, for your generous, creative spirit. It is so inspiring to me. Thank you, Sioux Falls in South Dakota, for bringing me there and sponsoring this episode and that trip. I am, man, even just going back through these conversations, I am so excited and fueled by the enthusiasm that I witnessed there. I think, you know, I usually am traveling to these big creative hotspots, if you will, and I love them. I'm inspired by going to LA and New York and so many of my favorite creative people live in those places, but witnessing the enthusiasm for creativity that I saw in Sioux Falls has just reinvigorated me. You know, this idea of just like tasting this beer, tasting this coffee, tasting this sandwich, tasting these screen prints. I'd licked a few screen prints while I was there. seeing that and just this energy of like, we made that. Can you believe we get to do this? We get to make this stuff for a living and contribute to our creative community and do it together with friends, like, and be part of this thing. Like, that enthusiasm, I haven't felt that enthusiasm since like 2007, when I was back in college, just getting my teeth sunk into this creative meat for the first time. And tofu, if you're vegan. I know you can't eat metaphorical meat if you're vegan, but just the enthusiasm of like, let's make something and let's do it for each other and share and support and encourage each other. I found so much of that raw enthusiasm and lack of jadedness in Sioux Falls, and it really did fire me up. I hope this episode fires you up as much as these conversations did for me. Total gifts. Loved it. Thanks again, South Dakota, for making this happen. Don't forget to go check out the hashtag State of Create. Hashtag State of Create. Go check out the amazing wilderness that inspires these people in South Dakota and see all the cool stuff they're doing. I think they got something really special. If you're ever in the area, go check it out. It's not a huge place, but it is packed to the brim with creative enthusiasm, cool record shops, cool people doing cool stuff. You're not going to want to miss it. Hashtag State of Create. Thanks again, South Dakota. And you can find all the links to the people that I talk to in this show at creativepeptalk.com/episodes. Go check out the show notes, and there all the things are linked up in that place. Man, so many good creative tactics and tips. I've been referencing this stuff ever since I had these conversations, and I think you will too. Don't leave that doggy bag of delicious pizza on the table. Take these things away, take some notes, put them into practice. And you're going to see some cool stuff happen in your own creativity. Thanks to Yoni Wolf in the band Y for our theme music. Thanks to Ryan Appleton, who is my agent, who helped like organize this whole thing and made sure that I knew where to go and when and how and worked out all the details. Couldn't have done it without you, man. Thanks to Alex Sugg for our theme music. You can go listen to the theme music. It's instrumental music, really good for working too, for getting those creative juices flowing. We need some instrumental stuff. Go check it out. Alex Sugg, Creative Pep Talk Soundtrack Volume 1 on Spotify and Apple Music. Thanks to Chris Graham for audio assistance. And until we speak again, stay pepped up.